Joining us on the phone from West Palm Beach, Grammy-nominated jazz pop vocalist Jane Monheit. Jane, great to have you on the WBGO Journal.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've moved to the West Coast. How's it been going out there, first of all?
I love it. I love living in California. Really happy out there.
You have a huge event coming up, the newly renovated Hackensack Performing Arts Center. It's called Pack the House. It's a new series to offer an array of distinctive acts that co-sponsored by the Hackensack Main Street Business Alliance and the City of Hackensack. And you'll actually be the premiere on November 11th, and I understand they've even added a second show. People know what good music is all about, right, Jane?
I think so, especially in that part of the world.
You know, your most recent album, The Songbook Sessions, Ella Fitzgerald, is really something that means a lot to you, doesn't it?
It does. You know, Ella is my hero. I grew up listening to her, you know, nonstop from the time I was born. So she's a huge influence on me, and I've been waiting for a long time to, you know, find the right moment to pay tribute to her.
All too soon we had a part. The moment you had touched my heart, and with you went my dreams. All too soon. Sweet was our affair, and you put all the sweetness there. What a shame that it's gone all too soon.
When did it first strike you that this lady had something that you wanted to maybe change and give us your version of?
Well, you know, my whole life I've learned so much from her, you know, like different things at different times. Whether it was, you know, I'm a little kid and I'm learning how to improvise, or I'm a teenager and I'm learning how to sing with a little more, you know, emotional gravity and warmth, or, you know, so she's, you know, been with me through every different developmental part of my, you know, musical life. And so I had gotten to this point now where I was just like, you know what, it's time, I gotta do this. I got to do it. And the funny part is I didn't even realize it was the centennial when I made the record. Everyone else was coming out with an Ella project at the same time, and I was like, wait, why? And then I realized it was her 100th birthday, and I was like, oh, well, I guess I timed it right.
Yeah, the timing couldn't be better. Now you're producer, arranger, and also the trumpet great Nicholas Payton. You two work well together.
Well, he's a really dear friend. Like, we are tight, you know? We really like working together. So, you know, I always think that, like, when you've got love in the band, man, that's when some really, really magical stuff can happen, you know. And Nick and I have that. Like, we really dig working together. When he arranges for me, he's arranging from a place where he knows me really well, not just as a musician, but as a person. So, you know, we get some really cool stuff that way. I mean, I could never overemphasize how important I think it is to really, like, love and respect our fellow musicians.
Pack the House series, how did this develop for you?
You know, I really don't know. I just got the call to do it, and I was thrilled, especially to be, you know, the series opener. That's, you know, always a big honor. And it's close to home. You know, I grew up on Long Island, you know, so lived in New York until a year ago. So, you know, I'm thrilled to be a part of it, man. And I really love working with Tony Desserre. I think he's extraordinary. We've recorded together. We've sung live together. So the fact that we're going to be working together on this show is, you know, something I'm really excited about.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of Jane Monheit. You know, you mentioned you were raised on Long Island in Oakdale, and your whole family is musical. So do you remember the first time you actually did anything music-wise, whether he's either sing or play an instrument?
No, I mean, it was just always a huge part of daily life. I never didn't sing. You know, I honestly never didn't sing. And there was a piano in the house. I always played it. I think I started lessons sometime in, you know, elementary school. Started playing woodwinds in third grade. You know, it was just always there.
And you had a number of different influences. You know, your aunt and grandmother were singers, your mother in musical theater, your dad, you know, folk, bluegrass, acoustic blues. So I would say that that all kinds of seeps into Jane Monhide at some point.
It really does. You know, I've kind of really made it all a part of my life, especially the, you know, the folk influences from my dad and the musical theater influences from my mom. You know, the beautiful thing about our genre is that it blends so beautifully with other forms of music. And so when we take all of these beautiful American art forms and kind of weave them together, that's when, you know, some really cool stuff happens.
Come on and dream with me. You're such an accomplished artist. Do you think back to that time when you were just kind of really making your mark in this business?
All the time. You know, I look back and I think, especially the thing I think about most is all of the guys that I got to play with back then. You know, I mean, I look back, I was working with Kenny Barron and Ron Carter and, you know, Fathead and Hank Crawford and Bucky Pizzarelli. And I played a duo show with Tommy Flanagan. I mean, I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And it was such a massive learning experience for me because I had grown up listening to these guys. So the honor of working with them wasn't lost on me. I absorbed every minute of it, listened to everything they had to say, listened to every note they played, and just sort of like studied every minute with these guys. And I feel so grateful for that.
People who love Disney movies will always think of Peter Pan with Never Never Land, but you will think a bit differently when you hear that title as well.
Yeah, I think back to that time. You know, I was fresh out of college, and I was green. You know what I mean? I was a young, early 20-something-year-old. Do you know what I mean? I was on the naive side in a lot of ways, so I was really ready to learn from people, you know.
What would be the nicest compliment you would get after the Pack the House series? Something that would really mean something to you from one of your fans or somebody who's just heard you perform for the first time?
Honestly, you know, I think what we really want out of music is to, you know, give people, you know, like a moment's relief from the world. You know, we are living in heavy times. There's just so much ugliness around us right now. And if I can give people, you know, like an hour where they're not thinking about that, I will be thrilled.
Jane Monhart will be performing on November 11th and 12th at the Hackensack Performing Arts Center. Hack Pack, they call it, Pack the House series, offering a range of distinctive acts. And Jane Monhart will be the opening premiere on November 11th. Jane, glad to have you on the show, and great to catch up with you. All the best on the West Coast, and we look forward to you back on the East Coast in November.
Well, thank you so much.
Now joining us on the WBGO Journal is the other person performing at the Pack the House series at the Hackensack Performing Arts Center. The wonderful Tony DeSere joins us. Tony, thanks for being on the WBGO Journal.
Hey, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Tony, tell us a little bit about this Hackensack Performing Arts Center. Obviously, it's a newly renovated place. You've never been performing in Hackensack before, right?
Right. Well, I did the street fair in Hackensack a couple years ago. It was a summer outdoor thing, which was great. And yeah, everyone's really excited about this new space. It's very intimate, only about 200 seats. The first show sold out so quickly, they added a second show. So you know, brand new sound system and lights, and they're really, you know, the people behind it are really trying to make something special, and they've got a great, you know, in addition to Jane and me, I feel like they've got a great season. So yeah, I'm really excited to be a part of the grand opening and christen the place right, you know.
Absolutely. You know, you've performed with so many symphony orchestras, and you have a number coming up, including one of my favorites, being from the Pittsburgh area, the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Does it take a different mindset to be a singer-performer, singer-pianist, and you're performing with the symphony?
At first it did. When I first started doing it, the early experiences were very intimidating, you know, because I was kind of just coming out of playing clubs and smaller rooms and cabaret rooms in New York and, you know, getting into these huge concert halls that seat, you know, 1,500 to sometimes 3,000 people, and you know, big stage, and then all these wonderful musicians behind me, as well as the audience in front, and then the spotlights, and you know, just so many people. It felt, you know, in the first, you know, kind of scary, and then, you know, as time has gone on, I just love it. I just feel every moment that I'm on stage with an orchestra, it's just so special to me, and I really try to bathe in the music that's happening live on stage, and it's my very favorite thing that I get the privilege of doing.
Tell us what this show on the 11th and 12th of November will be like for you.
Well, I'm really excited to work with Jane. We've recorded together before, and we've known each other for years, but this is the first time that we're actually sharing a bill. So looking forward to seeing her set, first of all, and then we're planning to do a couple numbers together. And my show consists of a mix of old standards. I'll do everything from Irving Berlin, I Love a Piano in 1915, through, you know, Ray Charles in the 60s, Billy Joel in the 70s, the Prince in the 80s, and then I'm a songwriter as well, so I always throw in, you know, three or four of my own songs into a set. So, you know, my part will be, you know, kind of a journey through the history of classic pop music, and, you know, some of my stories and stuff that I tell. So I love doing the intimate audiences as well, and it'll be a quartet, so it'll be me on piano, guitar, bass, and drums.
You know, you just kind of threw in there, yeah, I'm a songwriter as well. You're quite an acclaimed songwriter. Where does the inspiration come from you? When could it just be sitting across someone on an airplane? Could it be a breakfast with someone? Where do you get your ideas?
Yeah, you know, it all comes down to, you know, as far as what the song is about, you know, it comes down to one idea that I think maybe I haven't heard in a song before. For example, I wanted to write a song in a tango style, and I just, you know, it was so hard to come up with anything that felt interesting until I kind of thought, okay, what if I tell the story of a couple dancing a tango in New Orleans, and then all of a sudden all these images come to mind, and then, you know, I kind of quickly can output a song called the New Orleans Tango, just about, and you get to use all these, you know, kind of mixing, you know, New Orleans music and tango, and telling a story about, you know, in the kind of hot, sexy streets of Bourbon Street and New Orleans. And so it's like it just all these images come to mind. So the hardest part is just coming up with the initial idea, like, you know, a couple dancing a tango in the streets of New Orleans.
Both you and Jane Monheit are active on social media. It's something that you almost have to do as an artist these days, right?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and who would have thought when I was getting started so many years ago that it would be a big part of the job to maintain all these accounts. And, you know, it's probably one of the things that, as I've gotten more and more busy, you know, on the road and composing, that I'm not as good as I probably could be keeping it up. But I try my best, because it is so important, and it is a great way to stay in contact with the people who are interested in what I'm doing. And I think it's, you know, it's really given, you know, music that is sometimes overlooked by the masses, like jazz, and think, you know, it's an avenue for artists like Jane and myself to access people that really like jazz or really like what we're doing, and it makes it possible to keep going.
Well, you now have several jazz albums under your belt. One of the things I'd like to talk to you about, you know, I had the honor, obviously we're a public radio station, WBGO, Tony, is to see the Prairie Home Companion show performed live. Now, you've had that opportunity to be a performer. What was that like for you?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, I grew up seeing Garrison Keillor on, you know, PBS, and then hearing Prairie Home Companion on the radio. And when the opportunity came up to do it, I thought, great. And it's one of those experiences as a performer that's kind of surreal, because, you know, I've been familiar with, and all of a sudden, and all, you know, in the way the format of that show works, it's so hectic, like watching it take place and watching them, you know, perform for the audience as well as doing live radio. But they're so good at it. But I'm just there for the first time. So then they're just like, go, and you do your thing. And it's really, you know, you try not to think about not only the live audiences but listening, but the whole entire NPR audience. It was a great experience. Garrison was really sweet. I mean, I ran into him about a year later. We were staying at the same hotel on the road, and we talked about that night, and that appearance on Prayer Home Companion actually sold a lot of CDs for me too. So they have an amazing loyal audience.
Speaking of live radio, do you remember the first song or one of the first few songs you ever heard on the radio that actually had meaning to you?
That's an interesting question. You know, I grew up with kind of like they liked adult contemporary, I guess what would be called that format now. So, I mean, in my early childhood, I remember, you know, getting ready for school with Billy Joel and Elton John were having lots of big hits back then. And that really did shape me, you know, as far as just kind of being fascinated with the piano. And I don't know if there's any one particular song. I think the songs I was most captivated with earlier on were the ones my dad would play on guitar. He'd get home from work every night and he'd play guitar for 2 or 3 hours a night. And it's those songs that he used to sing and play. James Taylor, The Beatles, Eagles, David Gates and Bread. It's those songs that really kind of form my early concepts of melody and song structure, things like that.
Both you and Jane, your fathers, were guitar players. So does that mean maybe if you want your kid to eventually become a star singer or pianist or get that music into them early, make sure that you play a little bit of musical instruments for them?
Well, I think there's definitely something to that because I had live music in the house from a very, very early age. And my dad continues to play. He's 70 years old and he's still working a few days a week, but he plays hours a day and for his own enjoyment. And I got to believe that hearing live, you know, guitar in the house every night for, you know, 2 or 3 hours at a time shaped, my brain. So, yeah, I would say that works.
What song will you be performing on the 11th and 12th at the Hack Pack that will mean the most to you?
Well, probably there's a song that I wrote called How I Will Say I Love You, which I tend to play in every show, which is a very personal song to me. And it, no matter how many times I do it, I feel the connection with the audience, and it makes it special to me every time I do it. So that one always really gets me into the space I was when I wrote that song.
Sing the blues, I'll listen intently. Call my name, I'll be at your door. Cry out loud, I'll hold you till it's over. And that's how I will say I love you. Fall asleep, I'll wake up beside you. Feel my heart beating next to yours. Lose your way, I promise I will find you. And that's how I will say I love you.
It's a love song, but it was actually written at a time for me when I was about to go through I was about to get divorced. So I had a relationship ending, and it was really about how I knew that love should be, you know, whether it be between romantic partners or family, whatever it is, and knowing that that's in my heart, knowing what that it should feel like, that it should be like that, and that's not what I had. So, and it's interesting the life that song has had, and that it's been used in so many people's weddings and for first dances, and people have it framed on their wall as like their song for their relationship. Some people have, you know, sung it in cabarets about their kids, you know, so it's interesting that a song that has meant, you know, if I do have a song that has touched a lot of people, it is that one. And, it's interesting the origins from where it came out of me and also what it means to other people.
You go to a place like Hack Pack and you've performed all over, you know, all over the country, from Carnegie Hall to Las Vegas. Does it matter the venue, or do you just take what the audience is giving you that night?
In the early days, I used to think that made a big difference. It certainly makes a difference as far as, like, if the venue is great, if the atmosphere is good, if the sound is really good, that just makes my job easier. But I've really found, you know, year after year and going all over the world now, I mean, I've been to, you know, Japan several times, Hong Kong, Australia, Europe. And the interesting thing is the human response to music is the same wherever you go. And I pretty much don't even really think about that much anymore because it's just about my, you know, my time with the audience. And the more, you know, the more the environment is conducive to, you know, not being distracting in any way. Like one time I did a show at a performing arts center where it was in the middle of winter in the Northeast and the heat went out like an hour before the show. So throughout the whole show, everybody had their, you know, hats and jackets on. And, you know, I'd call that a pretty big distraction. So I don't think people enjoyed the show to the maximum. But, you know, if the conditions are pretty good and I got a decent piano, I know we're going to have a great time.
And the Great American Songbook is the Great American Songbook, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, you have these songs, and I was just thinking about that yesterday, these songs that, you know, as people were writing them, they were just kind of, you know, doing their job in the moment at the time, you know, back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, probably not realizing that what they were crafting would become a big gift to the world. Because I was thinking about Charlie Chaplin's Smile and just about, you know, he gave such a gift in the film medium and his physical performance, but also that song is just really such a gift to people. And a lot of, you know, so many of the Great American Songbook songs are and just have this instantly timeless quality to them that I responded to, you know, when I was a teenager in the 90s. And I see kids, you know, when I do master classes or, you know, things for Michael Feinstein's American Songbook Foundation, you know, I see 15, 16-year-old kids now discovering that quality in these songs. And it's great. And it's also, you know, gives me faith that these songs will remain in people's consciousness and will continue to mean something to people.
Pack the House series starts November 11th. And this performance by Tony and Jane will be on the 11th and the 12th of November. Tony, what a pleasure to have you on the WBGO Journal.
Great to talk to you, Doug.